In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I had a fascinating conversation with Shara Ebbins, technologist, futurist, keynote speaker, and self-proclaimed sci-fi geek. Shara and I discuss her background, how she transitioned from technologist to futurist, and what sparked her interest in this smart community space. We have a really interesting chat about all kinds of futuristic technology and some great examples of smart concepts, including self-repairing cities using fleets of autonomous drones and robots. Shara shares how this is already being implemented to various degrees around the world and the future of this technology. We cover driverless cars, drones, and hyperloops, and the opportunities and challenges these technologies pose to Australia, as well as how Shara sees Australia embracing smart concepts. We also discuss the future of work and the new categories of jobs that we will see as our homes and cities become smarter. We finish off talking about emerging trends of security, privacy, ethics, and the impacts of virtual digital assistants such as Google Home, Amazon Alexa, and other similar devices. Now, just a note on this episode, there are a few clicks and noises in the background at the second half of this episode, so please forgive us for those. But as always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play with smart communities. The future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The smart community podcast is what you're looking for.
Just before we get into the episode, I wanted to let you know that you can now support the Smart Community Podcast via Patreon. That's patreon.com/smartcompod with 2 M's. If you become a patron, you'll get a special episode each month exclusive to supporters. If you would like to feature on the Smart Community Podcast, you can also head to Patreon where you can sponsor an episode. There are options for either a full featured episode or adding a promo for your company or an event coming up. There are both once-off and monthly options. Thank you so much for your support so far. It is my dream for the podcast to be self-sustaining so it can continue to be produced for my smart community no matter what the circumstances. Enough from me, on with the episode. Hello, Shara. How are you today?
Hi, Zoe. I'm great. And thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
No worries. I'm so glad we finally coordinated our calendars.
I know. It can be really hard with my travel schedule. I tend to bounce around quite a lot as a keynote speaker.
Definitely. I'm keen to hear more about that when we jump in. So let's start with, can you tell us about your background and what you are passionate about?
Well, I'm a technologist. I've been in the technology industry for my entire adult life. And even before I was grown up, I was a sci-fi geek. In fact, even before I could read, I was very much into science fiction. And as a technologist in running tech analyst firms for the last 20 years, I've developed a track record of predicting next big things. And people started to call me a futurist. And I decided, you know what, it's time to actually own it and do that for a living. So I repositioned what I was doing about 4 years ago into becoming a futurist keynote speaker. And that's what I do full time now. And it is huge fun, but there's so much going on that it's almost impossible to keep track of everything.
Yeah, totally agree. So tell us what sparked your interest in smart cities or the smart city space.
Well, I'm interested in all kinds of futuristic technologies, not just smart cities. And I'm interested in the future of humanity and in privacy and security and ethics and jobs of the future. And frankly, all of this meshes in together because you can't just take smart cities in isolation. You know, so you might think of smart cities in terms of things like sensors or the Internet of Things, but then you also have to draw into picture robots, in particular driverless cars, and drones, and next generation transport like hyperloops, and all sorts of other things that make a city really smart.
Yeah, no, totally agree. So what is a smart city to you?
Well, for me, I'd say at this stage right here in 2018, A smart city is one that has deployed sensors and controllers in various ways that give them real-time insights that they can take action on. And there are lots of examples that I could give you. I talk about this all the time in my keynote, but one, for example, is Trenitalia in Italy. They've outfitted their trains with sensors. So instead of doing maintenance on a scheduled basis, they do maintenance when a part actually needs to be repaired or replaced, and it saves them a lot of money. Or there's a really cool sensor here in Sydney, on Sydney trains, and it's called Mousetrap, and it smells the odor of spray paint or permanent markers. And as soon as it sniffs it out, it sends a CCTV camera feed back to the train's office and police so that they can see what's going on. And they can tell the difference as to whether someone is actually doing graffiti and vandalism or just carrying home a bucket of paint from a local hardware store. I mean, those are just a couple of really simple examples of how sensors are being used in smart cities. But it goes well beyond that. It goes to infrastructure maintenance and pedestrian traffic and building temperatures and using green energy, whether it be solar or wind, and getting ready for electric vehicles. There's so much happening in this smart city space.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely agree. There's so much happening and it's really hard to keep up. So I do not envy you at all.
Well, you know what? It's a lot of fun. And I get to talk to researchers all over the world. And being a science fiction, a sci-fi geek. Yep. I love it. I love talking to scientists and going into their research labs. And robots are being used in so many different ways. Have you ever heard of self-repairing cities?
I've heard the term, but can you explain?
Sure. It's a new concept that I first heard about in 2015. Because of a project that was being done at the University of Leeds in the UK, where they had this view that they'd like to design a city that by 2050 does not need humans to repair infrastructure, and that things like potholes become a distant memory of the past. And the way to do this is to design fleets of autonomous little robots that are able to suss out where a repair is needed in real time and then make those repairs. So one of the things that they had in mind to do was to design little flying robots, drones, that have the ability to perch on buildings or light posts and be able to make repairs like changing a light bulb. And another idea they had was preventing potholes from ever becoming big craters. And we all know how horrible it is when we hit a pothole and the next thing you know, we take our car into a shop to get it fixed. So their idea was that they wanted to make this something that is an ancient memory. And when I first talked to the scientist involved in the project, I had pictures of drones flying across the city and just mapping out where potholes in the making might be. And I asked one of the scientists about it, and he said, no, actually, we'd like to collaborate with the driverless car industry because all of these autonomous vehicles are going to have sensors and high-definition cameras. So let's get data from them and then send out the fleets of robots to fix them. But in the meantime, we're not yet at a stage where we've got cities filled with autonomous vehicles. So what they've ended up doing is going back to what I thought was my original idea. And that was they've designed three different robots, drones, one that flies around and finds out where there's a pothole in making, another one that goes and does some pre-repair work. So it does the digging and the prep. And then a third one that has an onboard 3D printer that is able to print out asphalt or tarmac and effect a repair. And that's just one example. There are a lot of other companies that are looking at doing self-repairing. In fact, there's work being done where you can actually have robots that are live inside of gas main networks that are doing repairs without turning off the gas. And you can imagine how useful that would be. There's a robot called Sysbot that's already being used in Brooklyn in New York and also in the UK to be able to fix gas pipelines. And there are a lot of other robots that are being designed right now for doing this sort of self-repairing city. And part of the idea with the self-repairing city is that it will be like the white blood cells in our body, and having a city that behaves almost like a living organism. And these little tiny robots will basically wipe out the bad bacteria and viruses, the city defects, as they are detected. And they're looking at robots that will also go deep underneath the city into boreholes and initially just be able to sense and report on what's happening in them, but eventually to be able to be small enough and capable of fixing things that are happening deep underground. And it's not just science fiction, Zoe. Here in Sydney, where I live, there's been a collaboration between government, the New South Wales Roads and Maritime, and University of Technology Sydney to design autonomous robots to help maintain the Sydney Harbour Bridge, which is one of the largest steel bridges, not the largest, in the whole world. And they've designed an autonomous robot that uses a term called biomimicry, basically mimicking real-world organisms, in this case an inchworm, to design a robot to be able to crawl along autonomously in places that can't get to. And they've got two robots that are live on the Sydney Harbour Bridge. They're named Sandy and Rosie, and they literally are autonomously mapping out through this massive steel infrastructure all of the parts of the Sydney Harbour Bridge, and they're giving live feeds back into the GIS system that the bridge engineers use, and then the engineers can decide when maintenance needs to happen, and the robots can conduct maintenance as well. So smart cities are going to get really smart once we start having these little fleets of autonomous robots. And then we get into things like driverless cars and drones and Hyperloop, and gosh, I could just keep going.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think I'm really keen to hear about so many of the things, but I might just ask the next question first and then we'll jump into some of the, do a deep dive. Okay. So why do you think that this smart city concept is so important?
Well, in a nutshell, I think using technology to make increasingly more crowded cities livable and more efficient and more energy efficient is crucial to humanity because our population is growing. Demographers predict that we'll have about 9.7 billion people on the planet by the year 2050. And right now, I guess in 2010, about 50% of the world's population lived in cities. And by 2025, it's expected to rise to 60% of the world's population and then go higher still. And what's crazy is that cities only account for about 2% of the planet's land mass. So we've got to be really smart about how we design cities and make them livable and comfortable for people.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's a really important issue, particularly when we're talking about not just population growth, but then urban migration on top of that as well. And like you said, that density is just so interesting. I hadn't really heard it in those terms, but 60% of the population in 2% of the land mass. So, you know, so many interactions, we need to become smarter.
Yeah. And in fact, there's a race going on right now, primarily in Asia and in the Middle East, to build taller and taller buildings, again, to serve this increasing population that wants to live in cities. But one of the interesting things that's a side effect of this is that there's also a race to build faster and faster lifts, or elevators, as they say in the United States. And the Shanghai Tower in China recently won a Guinness World Book of Records. They've got a lift that is capable of going 74 kilometers per hour.
Wow.
And on the way down, they have to slow it because you can just imagine going down that fast in a glass elevator. That wouldn't be much fun, would it?
No. Yeah, totally. Oh, cool. Well, let's talk about some of the projects and things you're working on right now, or, you know, some of the things that you're researching. I'm really keen to hear your thoughts on the Hyperloop in particular, because it's an area that I've been interested in. So let's start with that.
Okay, great. Well, I'm a keynote speaker, so I research and talk to scientists all over the world, but I'm not necessarily working on the projects per se. I'm following them and talking to people about them. Hyperloop is so interesting because it was, well, first of all, an idea that Elon Musk came up with in like late 2012 and then wrote a paper in 2013 and open sourced it. And it's about taking a big tube and depressurizing it so that you have a near vacuum. And with a near vacuum, you don't have the wind resistance so that things can be pushed through it much faster than car or train would in the atmosphere on the ground on Earth. And there are a number of companies that are working on Hyperloops, including, as it turns out, one of Elon Musk's companies called the Boring Company, as in boring tunnels. And what's fascinating about it is that there are test tracks right now being used mainly in the U.S. to try to prove out the idea. So far, they have not reached the kinds of theoretical speeds that people are expecting. So theoretically, a cruising speed would be 760 kilometers an hour with a top speed of about 12 or 1300 kilometers an hour. That's really fast. Right now, my understanding is that on the test tracks, they've gotten up to about 370 kilometers per hour, which is still fairly fast, but they're relatively short tracks too. But the potential is huge, especially in Australia where I live. There is a proposal out to put in a Hyperloop that would literally allow you to live in a regional city like Newcastle and get to Sydney in 10 minutes, as opposed to driving for 2 hours. And if you can imagine having Hyperloops along the east coast of Australia or the east coast of the United States or any other country, and allowing people to live in regional areas but still work and play and socialize in the big capital cities or major cities and get there in a really short amount of time, that is a game changer.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a total game changer, and it would just change the way that we even think about work, you know, not having to necessarily, you know, spend a whole day going to Sydney for a business meeting from Brisbane, but actually, you know, being able to get there in a very short period of time. So it's not such a drain on your health and well-being when you have to spend, you know, so much time traveling in a plane and then to and from the airport and that kind of thing.
And not only that, but think about how many people commute for 2 hours in each direction. And maybe they're not taking a train or public transport and they're using their car. And of course, that's adding to pollution. And, you know, you can listen to radio and maybe talk on the phone, but that can be dangerous because you can get distracted. But what if instead of 2 hours, it took you 10 minutes? Imagine how that impacts your quality of life. You get to spend time with your family or engaging in hobbies or working longer if that's what you want to do. But it's basically freeing up hours of your day every single day that are spent in just commuting. So it's a big game changer. And I really hope that some of the proposals that have been put forward for Hyperloops, especially in Australia, go through, because I could really see how it would make a big difference and put us in a world-class league where a lot of other countries are looking at Hyperloops, everywhere from the US to the United Arab Emirates and the Netherlands and Finland and all sorts of places are looking at Hyperloops right now. And I've also seen some costings that suggest that building a Hyperloop could be a lot less expensive than building a high-speed train track.
I commute. I'm one of those people that commute 2 hours.
Can you imagine, what that would do if you didn't have to commute?
Yeah, totally. And I think there's so much we can do, in telecommuting. There's only so much we can do in telecommuting. But making that face to face easier and more accessible and it makes the face to face so much, more important. And if I could do that in 10 minutes rather than an hour and a half / 2 hours in traffic, it would change the way we think about, living and working. I guess, people will then be able to live in cool, in regional areas without the traffic and, that lifestyle, but then still be able to work in their office building in Brisbane or in Sydney or Melbourne or the big cities, if that's what they choose to do. So it could really revolutionize that.
And not only that, but property in the big cities here in Australia is so expensive. It's really priced out of the market for a lot of people, unless they have very high paying jobs. So imagine being able to buy a nice house or a nice apartment in a regional area, but still be able to work in a big city.
Mm. Yeah.
Just such a game changer.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. Yeah. When I was in Korea recently, I talked to some researchers, in Hyperloop and got really excited about it. So, I think that it's, definitely something to consider. In Australia, particularly when we've got such large distances to cover.
Yeah. Well, speaking of transport, one of the things that I wanted to get back to was driverless cars. And what many people are not aware of is that a lot of the vehicles that are commercially available today already have semi-autonomous features, things like self-parking or cruise control assistance. And that's really a robot driving your car. And every single auto manufacturer in the world, bar none that I know of, is planning to have autonomous or semi-autonomous vehicles by the model year 2020 or 2021. It's only a couple of years away, and we're going to start seeing these in cities very, very soon. And we're at the point where the technology is really good, but not 100%. And unfortunately, people do tend to get complacent when things work 98% of the time. You sort of take your eyes off the road and you're texting or you're doing something else, but you're not necessarily paying attention when you really need to. So we're at this inflection point where we still need to pay attention, even if it is in an autonomous mode. Eventually, it's going to get good enough that we can just sit in the back seat, not worry about it. But I think we're still a few years away from that. But most importantly, from an infrastructure planning perspective, are two other aspects. And the first is that these vehicles are either electric or hybrid electric, and we need to put in place infrastructure so that they can charge up. And I know in Sydney, there are only a couple of places that have EV chargers. If we don't get on the ball, we're going to have cars that are manufactured for global use, and we're not going to be able to use them because we haven't put infrastructure in place to allow them to top up. So we need to think about that, but it gets more interesting still because these cars have all kinds of sensors and cameras on them, and they use GPS, which is getting better and better and more accurate because of things that are happening there. But they're also going to be communicating with each other in vehicle-to-vehicle networks, which are being experimented on but aren't deployed yet. And they'll be cloud-based, if you like, traffic control. So imagine that you've got a car that's hit a pothole. It will send a signal to the cloud, and then every other car behind it will know that there's a pothole at a specific coordinate and avoid it, or an icy patch, whatever that may be. And even more importantly is that I expect that every piece of traffic infrastructure, like traffic lights and speed limit signs and stop signs, will be fitted with sensors that are broadcasting out things like, I'm a green light and I'll be green for another 20 seconds, or the speed limit right here is 60 kilometers per hour. Say goodbye to traffic infringement notices. That's going to be a thing of the past. It will disappear once that happens.
Yeah. No, I think there's so much in that space. And it's not just about, you know, the fact that there isn't a driver, but it's actually that about that connected piece and how that's going to really change the way we use and plan and design the transport network.
And it will have a ripple effect too, because over time, people may decide, I don't actually need to own a car. I'll just call one when I need it. And that's going to have an impact on parking garages, or car parks, as they say in Australia. It's going to have an impact on auto mechanics. It's going to have a huge impact on the insurance industry, and especially with liability when things go wrong. Imagine that you're in an autonomous vehicle that doesn't have a steering wheel or brake pads or an accelerator and something goes wrong. Who gets blamed? Is it the person who's the quote-unquote driver? Is it the car owner? Is it the car manufacturer? Is it the software engineer who wrote the code that was running in the car? You know, what's going to happen? These are a lot of things that we need to sort out pretty quickly, because they're going to be on the roads and already are on the roads very, very soon.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm keen to hear the answer to your next question, which is, how do you think that Australia is embracing the smart city concept? Now, I know you work all over the world. Let's talk about Australia first. And how do you think Australia is embracing this concept?
Okay. My answer, of course, is multi-part. First, I should say that a lot of my specific research when I have free time over the last 12 months has been about defining jobs of the future. So I haven't been specifically looking for Aussie examples of smart cities, but there definitely are a lot of projects. One that I know of that is a coordinated project is happening in Canberra, where they have a lot of interconnected projects. I see quite a bit of planning happening with the combination of 3D using either LiDAR or satellite to come up with extremely high definition images of the built up areas in Australia, in conjunction with the use of augmented reality and virtual reality. So, for instance, in Canberra, one of the things that they were looking to do with their LiDAR-based 3D model was to be able to look at development applications and see it from all angles and be able to see what happens at different times of the day as the sun is in different positions, and allow the community to be able to see things in 3D so that they can make informed decisions about whether a development application is or is not in the best interest of their community. There are also really big projects happening from PSMA, which is a government agency that has embarked on a continent-wide satellite and AI analysis of the complete built-up environment of Australia, including regional Australia, so that it can be used by city planners, by infrastructure planners, by telecom companies, by electricity companies, by developers, by anybody that needs to have a really good understanding of the 3D environment. And once again, if you marry that with technologies like augmented and virtual reality, you can imagine how useful that kind of data set will be in planning cities. And another thing that I find really interesting are some solar power projects, and especially solar power for renters. And there aren't a whole lot of projects in Australia yet that are making that happened. But when I was at CES last year, I came across a company called Solpad that has this panel that you plug into an outdoor electrical outlet, and it collects solar energy, and then inside You've got another appliance that uses Bluetooth to communicate with the outside solar panel. And literally, you can run any appliance off of the solar panel, you know, a TV, a refrigerator, anything that you can think of. So I think solar power is something that we need to pay more attention to. And I think that smart cities will use more and more solar power. And in talking to developers, I know that a lot of them are starting to incorporate solar power and greenery in their plans as well.
Cool.
And I should say, I talked about the robots on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, and that's a project that has been part of a 9-year collaboration, and it's definitely a world first. So in some areas, we really are leaders. In other areas, there are some cool projects around the world that I think we can learn from too. For instance, in Chicago, there's a project called the Array of Things that has what looks like beehives that are clusters of sensors that they're putting on traffic poles. And they're collecting information about temperature and all kinds of pollutants and barometric pressure and pedestrian traffic and vehicular traffic and ambient noise and you name it. These sensors are collecting it and they're making it open source. They intend to have about 500 of them across the city, supposedly by the end of this year. I have a feeling it might be a little bit later, but by making this data set open source, they're essentially taking what is a big city and dividing it into micro neighborhoods and allowing third parties to design applications like an app that will help you, if you have asthma, walk from point A to point B without running into pollutants that might trigger your asthma, and also have pedestrians around you so that it's safe. You know, there are so many potential uses for that kind of data set. It's a really cool project.
Cool. I want to ask you the next question, but then I also want to ask you about your work in the future of work. Would you be interested in sharing a little bit about what you're doing with the future of work?
Sure. But before I do that, I'd like to just go back to one other concept in terms of smart cities. That is drones. And this is getting to be another really, really exciting area. Have you heard of flying taxis?
Yes.
And they are happening and they're being invested in by a lot of different companies. And in New Zealand, you know, our neighbor, there's been a project that's been in stealth mode for about 18 months now, in conjunction with a company called Kitty Hawk, where they've got an autonomous flying drone that does vertical takeoff and landing like a helicopter, and then it flies horizontally. And what's interesting about this project is that it's been done in conjunction with the regulator, which is different than a lot of other flying taxi projects. And the way that you would order this taxi is through an app, and it's electric, and you would basically use your app to order it and take off and land. Companies like Uber have projects called, well, their project is Uber Elevate, and they're looking to deploy that in a lot of cities around the world, initially in Los Angeles and Dallas-Fort Worth. But just recently, they've talked about doing projects in 5 other countries around the world. And Australia is one of them that they're looking to potentially have their Uber flying taxis. And one of the proposals that they have is to be able to get from Central Station in Sydney to Manly in about 8 minutes, as opposed to 110 minutes by car. And we're going to see three-dimensional vehicle-to-vehicle networks, highways in the skies, very shortly, too. It'll be behind the vehicle networks that are happening on the ground, because I think it will take a little bit longer for flying taxis and drone use to really become mainstream, but it's bound to happen. And our skies are about to change. And let's hope that they're a lot quieter than today's drones are. There's a reason they're called drones. If you live near an airport or near a flight path, you know how annoying that could be. Imagine having drones buzzing past your window all the time.
Yeah. Totally.
Some really interesting things in smart cities. So you wanted to talk about jobs of the future, and there are a lot of jobs that are being enabled by technology. And one of the things I'd like to say to your listeners is that automation, and here I'm talking about both robots and artificial intelligence, are going to impact just about every industry and just about every human on the planet. It's going to happen. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be out of a job. But the boring, repetitive parts of your job may very well be automated, and you'll be spending your time doing the more interesting parts of your job. And I'm encouraging companies to really work with their staff to help identify the bits of jobs that are repeatable and can be automated. And not getting rid of people, because that would be a disaster for society, but actually working on reskilling them for some of the new jobs. And there are so many, it is just crazy. But some of them will involve things like AI trainers, because the way that artificial intelligence learns, either through machine learning or deep learning, is basically you're feeding it lots of big data sets. But no human is able to actually read through these millions of documents and pieces of information that the AI is absorbing. And it sometimes makes wrong decisions or does unexpected things. And there's a technique called reinforcement learning that AI researchers have determined is necessary. And that is when an AI starts exhibiting unexpected behavior, you need a human in the loop to correct that and help get it back on track. And similarly, we're going to see robot trainers too, because if you think about it, a robot is a physical instantiation of artificial intelligence. And already there's a company called Kindred AI that has robots that work in warehouses, and they're using humans in virtual reality suits to literally control the robots through telepresence and teach them how to pick up different kinds of articles. So the way that you handle cloth, like a shirt, is different than how you would pick up and handle something like a glass vase. And we're going to see a lot of jobs that have people working with AI and robots and training them, including jobs like empathy trainers, teaching the machines how to interact in a more human-like manner. And the skills of those kinds of people will be more on the side of social sciences than computer science. I mean, obviously, they'll have to have an understanding of AI, but there'll be people like who are philosophers, poets, psychologists, you know, behavioral specialists. And that's just in AI. There are also brand new categories of people, you know, jobs that we'll see. For instance, if you think about home automation, so many appliances that we're buying are connected to the internet, and it doesn't have to be something like an Amazon Echo or a Google Assistant. It might be your refrigerator or your smart TV. And we'll need people who are able to set up these home networks in a way that is secure and that everything interacts properly. And I'm calling these home integration and cybersecurity specialists. But as we continue to live in smart homes, things are bound to go wrong, just like they do in our house today. Appliances break down. What's going to happen when you go to your smart house and the camera doesn't recognize any household member through its facial recognition and won't let anybody in. Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters? No, I think they'll call a smart home handy person. You know, so there'll be all these new jobs that come out of these technologies. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. I talk about this for hours and hours and hours. And I definitely don't want to go too far astray from smart cities since that's the subject of this particular podcast. But that gives you a hint of some of the jobs that will be out there. And I invite people to visit my website. I do a lot of videos and I post a lot about AI and jobs of the future. So you can find a lot more info there as well.
Yeah, totally. We'll put all the links in the show notes. Okay. So we've covered so much. This next question is, what are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about? But I think we've covered so many of those. Is there anything in particular you want to add?
Yes, there is. And that is security, privacy, and ethics, and the impact of virtual assistants. You know, so I'd mentioned home automation and devices like Alexa and Google Home. But what's happening is that on our smartphones and on our computers, we have virtual digital assistants that are being integrated in with the operating system stacks. And virtual digital assistants are also being used by companies to do things like automatically read emails or schedule meetings and so on. And what people do not realize is that once these devices are turned on, they are always on. They're always listening for their keywords. The companies, most of them that are behind these devices are recording everything in the background, in many cases transcribing it, and in some cases reselling it too. And it covers every aspect of your life, and not just your personal life, but your business life. I had something really funny happen to me a little while ago. I was doing a video conference with a colleague, and she was working from her home office. And I didn't know it at the time, but she had an Amazon Alexa. And three times during our conversation, Alexa interrupted us and said, "Sorry, I didn't understand that." And we didn't say the keyword Alexa. And, you know, we cracked up over it. But, you know, seriously, we have to think about the implications of virtual assistants always on, always listening to everything that we say and do on our devices.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Now, I missed one question. Do you have any final comments on integrating better across different disciplines, governments, and industries?
It's really a matter of collaboration and talking. It's not something that there's a particular formula for, but I think it's absolutely necessary. And I think a lot of people in government circles and certainly industrial circles and academic circles recognize the need for collaboration.
Awesome. It's been so awesome to chat with you, Shara. I'm so glad we got this together. And I say that I'm not envious, but yes, I'm also a little bit jealous about all the exciting things you get to research and travel around the world and talk about. So thanks so much for making the time to come on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Zoe. And if I may, people can find out a lot more about me from my website, which is just sharaevans.com, sharaevans.com. And from there, you can get to my social media websites like YouTube and LinkedIn and Twitter.
Excellent. So yeah, people can connect with you there, and we will put all the links in the show notes. And so people can click away and find you. Thanks again.
Oh, thank you so much, Zoe. I really appreciate you having me on your show. And thank you, audience, for taking the time to listen.
Awesome. Talk soon. Thanks, Shara.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community or find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter @smartcompod. That's com with two M's.
If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears, so thank you in advance. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.